Hey guys, Adam here from Chill Filtered, and just wanted to, before we get to the show, let you know that sometimes not everything goes as planned. You know, if you're a fan of the show, that we have been dedicated to having great audio for you on every episode. Unfortunately, since Cole has moved away, we've had to learn and grow, and so on this episode, some technical difficulties happened where Cole's end was not recorded, so we just have the phone audio from him, and there was something weird on my end that caused some echoes on my voice and some of the music bumpers in between the breaks and Whiskey World News. So we apologize for that. We will be back to normal next week and all that. All right. We're sorry, but still, this is a good episode. You should listen to it. Enjoy. Hey, welcome once again to Chill Filtered, the podcast where we drink whiskey so you don't have to, but you probably should. On today's episode, we're going to be drinking the Buffalo Trace Experimental Collection from 2015. Probably something you can't get your hands on, but we're happy to drink it for you. Before we get to that, let's get down to just a little bit of business. Thank you so much for tuning in. Please hit the subscribe button if you haven't already. And while you're there, you can leave a rating and a review on iTunes or Apple Podcasts app or wherever you can do that. That helps a ton. And if you want to play a bigger part in the show financially, maybe buy us a bottle, you can visit patreon.com/chillfiltered. That's the business. Here's the podcast. Cole, how are you?
I'm good. I think I say that every time. I don't say I'm good every time, but this week was like a great week for me.
Why is that?
You just like wake up. What's that?
I said, why is that?
You ever just like wake up in the morning and just feel like, all right, let's take on this day. I don't even know why it was. I think a lot of pressure has been kind of lifted off my shoulders, especially with work and stuff.
Right.
But it's just like, I'm grateful. I think like there's nothing in particular that I'm feeling like especially great about, but I feel just like super grateful, super I don't know, just content right now, which isn't always the case, but I'll take it when I can get it.
Yeah, I usually have those mornings where I am like, all right, let's do this, let's take on this day. I usually have those after a night of heavy drinking.
Oh really?
Yeah. If I get like really, really drunk, the next morning I feel great. I wake up super early and just like, I'm like, let's go for a run today or something.
Oh, nice. So when you, how often do you get like hangovers?
Almost never.
Really?
Almost. I can count on one hand the amount of times that I've had real hangovers.
Did I tell you, like, I found out that pretty much, and I might've mentioned this on the show even, that about 1 in 5 people are immune to hangovers.
Oh, so maybe I'm one of those people. You know, The times that I have had hangovers, they have been extremely bad. But again, it's less than 5 times probably.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. I got 0 myself. Pretty big deal over here.
You've never been drunk.
Yeah. True. But maybe I'd get a hangover from drinking too much kombucha or something, you know?
I guess. I mean, I guess. Probably not. I guess it's not even necessarily about being drunk. It's just about having alcohol and then your body, you know.
Like, process is weird.
Yeah, so I don't know.
I know people that like drink, for example, what was the New Belgium, they say, like, or like random breweries, but one guy I knew, he's like, whenever I drink New Belgium, I get a hangover even after one beer.
Well, it's probably like, it's probably about the what the beer is brewed with or brewed from.
For sure. Yeah, I'm just, yeah,
it's not necessarily it's about funny, the chemical. Brewery, it's about like whether it was a wheat beer or it was some other, like a rice beer. Like, I know that some people react differently to those. So,
yeah. Or some like breweries will only use one strain of yeast and there's right. Like oodles of strains of yeast, you know?
Right.
So, but who knows?
So you said stress is lifted from work. Any good stuff happening in Arizona?
It's probably hitting 90 these days. Let's see. But in terms of maybe not exactly Arizona, but I'm excited. I am going to Boise in June.
Oh.
Actually, we'll be able to hit up, my wife and I will be hit up the Dead Lows, some of our listeners out there.
Not just listeners, but they are members of our, they're patrons of the Patreon. So a big shout out to Robbie and the whole fam out there in Boise.
Yeah, and might as well just shout out the rest of our patrons, at least for now. We got Caleb Olson and Tim and Sarah Murray as well. So shout out to you guys for being great patrons.
And listeners, if you want to get a shout out on the show, all you have to do is go to patreon.com/chillfiltered, where you can, for as little as $1 a month, you can become a patron. And we'll, I don't know, someday we've got to do something special for our patrons. We got to get them some swag or something.
I think so.
So soon, very soon, patrons, we'll do that.
Yes.
How's your wife?
She's well. She is working hard, and yeah, we're just. Did I tell you we're saving up for a house? We're putting away a lot of money.
Yeah,
which is nice to do. It's hard. I'm a spender. I want to just be able to say, we have this money. Let's, you know, blow it on a night out or something like that.
Right.
Saving's dumb. Yeah. We've talked about our savings.
Saving is hard.
Tendencies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's very difficult.
Yeah. So, but what about you guys? How are you doing? How are you and Ashley?
We're good. We're both like, Ashley's still got this flu. I don't know if we talked about that last time.
Yeah, we did. Yeah.
She's just getting over it. She's like at the tail end of it. She actually went to work this past week, which is good. And I've been kind of sick, but I feel like I'm not fully sick or anything. It's like, something's trying to happen and my body's like, no, this is not going to happen.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's good. And then last night, was Friday night, and Story Slam helped present this new show, this comedy show, where there's also a element of storytelling with that. So I had a whole merch booth and stuff set up, and then I didn't host it. I wasn't the like the host, but I emceed a little bit and I introduced different people from the stage. So it got a lot of Story Slam got recognized by a lot of new people, like a lot of people who've never heard of it before.
Yeah.
So it got a lot of exposure. That's what I should say.
Exposure, exactly.
I only sold one T-shirt, which is fine. But I got paid to be there anyway because I helped promote it. So made a little money last night, which is always good. Had a few drinks and then had a lot. I had a good time listening to stories, and then there was stand-up comedy, and so I laughed a lot. So
that's cool.
Yeah, big shout out to Midwest Indie Comedy and Tyson Purcell, who booked or helped, or I don't know, asked me to help him make this show happen. So yeah, it was a lot of fun.
That's cool. And I mean, not even just free exposure, paid exposure on your part, which is pretty awesome.
Right, absolutely. So yeah, it was good times. We were there. I was there. Ashley stayed home because she's sick. And I'm there and I'm in like the little merch booth area that we had set up. And it was a standing room only crowd. Like all the seats were taken.
Right.
Yeah. And so there were some fans that were just there standing by the merch. And we're probably 15, 20 minutes into the show. And this woman who's standing in front of me, she turns around and was talking to somebody, and then when that person moved, she like was waved at me like excited, like, you know, and I didn't know who she was, and I just kind of nodded at her. And then she got this look on her face, like that classic, like, really face. And she goes, Jackie from Wind Down. And Wind Down was a bar in Madison that Ashley and I used to go to, and we made friends with this woman named Jackie. And I was like, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. So it's one of those things where like you have like a person that you know has a place associated with them, and if you see them outside of that place, it's like, I don't know who you are.
Make sense.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and then plus she had like dyed her hair, so I don't know, I didn't recognize her at all. But yeah, so it was a fun night.
Yeah, that's cool. I'm glad.
Yeah. Hey, Cole, can you give us just a quick little rundown of what we're drinking today?
Yeah, absolutely. So today we're drinking a very special bottle. We're drinking the Buffalo Trace Distillery's Experimental Collection. This specifically is from 2015, but really specifically, it was the release number 19. This is an old-fashioned sour mash bottle with entry proof of 105. And we'll get into why that's really special in a bit. But it's a bourbon. And yeah, they don't make it anymore, I'll tell you that. But
I am looking forward to that. But before we get to that, Cole, we're going to take just a really quick break. All right, back from break. And as we said before we went to break and at the top of the show, we're going to be drinking the Buffalo Trace Experimental Collection from 2015. And Cole, I have my little mini bottle that the courier brought me, the damaged top and all. And
that's right.
I only have about half of what was sent to me. This is our second Buffalo Trace product in a row, right? Like we did Buffalo Trace last week.
Yeah, we last week I was like worried, especially doing the research this week, that I would have to kind of just repeat a few facts and stuff like that.
That you'd like have none. But this,
yeah, but actually, as I was doing research, I was like, I have more than normal research.
Oh, cool.
I'll probably skim through a few things, but I literally wrote probably twice as much, or maybe 1.5 times as much as I normally do, because there is so much behind this experimental release collection.
Nice.
So I'll just get right into it.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. So this one specifically is the Buffalo Trace Experimental Collection Release 19. I mentioned earlier it was the old fashioned sour mash with the entry proof of 105. This was a 2-part release, actually. And the first release was this one, and the second release was entry proof 125, which means when it went into the barrel, it was that hot, as opposed to the 105, which is, you know, a little less hot. But they were both cut to 90 proof when they were bottled. So what they're doing is basically putting side by side like a two separate things and see which one is notable in, you know, the vanilla area or something like that. Which one's more enjoyable? All these kind of things they're comparing. But this is, you know, literally their 19th release. This experimental collection, these bottles started back in 2006. And for the record, they're all 375 milliliter bottles. So they're half bottles. But yeah, it's cool. So I want to go through
Wait a second. Is this the one that I had that one time at your apartment in Madison?
You did.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm so excited.
Yeah, this was one you had very cool notes for.
Right.
Yeah. So in 2006, they put out three separate releases. There was the French oak, charred French oak barrel instead of, you know, an American white oak barrel. And they aged it for 10 years. They did a twice barreled release. This was the second release. And they put it in the first barrel for 8 years, 8 months, and then 1 year, 4 months in a second new barrel. And basically, like I'm just going to rush through these all because they were, you know, like over 20 releases.
Right.
There was what they call the fire pot barrel, which basically means before they even use the barrel, they put it in an oven, like the actual barrel, and heated it up to 102 Fahrenheit for 23 minutes and then charred it. And then in 2007, they had a Chardonnay and Zinfandel aged, basically 10 years right there. After that, they did a Cabernet Franc in 2008 after like a finish. Not the original barrel, because bourbon needs to be new barrels. And they did that after 6 years and after 8 years. They compared those two. They also did a rum, like not even a rum barrel, like aged bourbon. It was like literally two rums. One was 17 years aged. That was in 2008. In 2009, they did an experiment based on the oak grain. They did a fine oak versus a coarse grain oak, meaning like the part of the tree, you get like a very gritty, coarse grain versus a very fine grain. Also in 2009, they did a double barreled, bourbon from 1993 that was 16 years and 5 months old. And in 1990, and then a 1997 double barreled 11 year and 10 month bourbon. 2010, they did a 1995 French oak barrel aged. And these were both whiskeys, and then 1995 American oak chips, seasoned chips, basically meaning they put in like wood chips into the barrel. Those were both whiskeys, not bourbons. and they were both 15 year olds. In 2011, they found random barrels. Yeah, what's up?
Hit me with the ones you think are important. We don't need to go through every single one.
These are so cool to me. Okay, I'll try to skip the big ones. But in 2011, they rediscovered some barrels hiding in the rick houses. And they're like, we have no idea what this thing is. Like, they didn't even mark the barrel besides the year it was bottled. So they found one that was in 1989, one in 1991, and one in 1993. Otherwise, everything else was unknown. And they just bottled it and put it out. They tried a rice and oat whiskey. In another year, they did French oak again. They did another hot box and heavy char with a number 7 char. Typically, the highest you'll get is number 4 or number 5. They charred the heck out of this barrel. They did entry-proof ones with a wheat bourbon. They did drying stave experiments, similar to the cured oak we had.
Yeah.
And I believe, honestly, this was 2013 that they did this the stave drying experiment. I believe it was probably the similar batch, almost altogether, that the cured oak would be. So what they do with these experiments is if it turns out great, they will actually do a release usually on this kind of bottle. In another year, they did entry proof for a rye-based bourbon. And I'm finishing up with the warehouse floors. They tried like ones on the bottom floor, ones on the 5th floor, and ones on the 9th floor of the rick house. They did infrared light waves. They did a 6-grain whiskey that had corn, buckwheat, brown rice, sorghum, wheat, and rye. And then they did seasoned staves, which, it's just cool, like all the crazy things they did with it. But this one in particular was batch number 2, or mashbill number 2, rather, which basically is the same mashbill they use for, what do you call it? Why am I blank? Blends and Elmer T. Lee. Hancock's Reserve. Those are all batch or mashbill number 2, but they did a sour mash. And what's a sour mash, you ask? A sour mash is like a way that before they ferment the mash, what they'll let it do is like sit for a day or so when it actually starts to taste sour. And then they put in the yeast to ferment it in the day. But it's also like pretty, intensive, labor intensive. So they don't really do that much anymore, but like you'll see sour mash for like Jack Daniels. If you look on the label, you'll see it's a sour mash or Tennessee whiskey. But this one in particular, yep. Entry proof 105. I like it a lot. Oh, one other thing I really wanted to mention. These are 375 bottles, as I mentioned, but typically they will only have a certain amount of barrels. I ask you these kind of questions all the time, but I want you to guess how many barrels went into this specific bottle release, like this 105 entry proof?
12.
3.
Okay.
And the average, like the average is around 2. Like they will only have that many barrels and they'll bottle as many as they can. And you're lucky if you even get a bottle. The highest release was 20 barrels, but typically you'll get like 1 or 2. So if you ever see a 375 bottle of the Buffalo Trace Experimental Collection, I would highly recommend picking one up because it's rare to begin with.
Yeah. So, well, cool.
Yeah, but I, and also one of the cool things is when you look at the label, it has a million minute details about what went into it. Like they say where they got the maker of the barrels. They say when it was exactly bottled, what day. They say, is it chill filtered? They say, everything about it is on the label, which is super cool to me that they're so upfront about their experiments to like be able to compare them.
You'll have to take a picture of that and post it on our Instagram.
Yeah, definitely.
Which you've been killing it lately on the Instagram. If our listeners aren't currently, following us on Instagram, they should, because Cole takes great pictures and all that stuff. All right, Cole, what do you say we start drinking this thing?
Let's do it.
Why don't you, the bottle now. Yeah, you pop it. Ooh, that was a good one.
Yeah.
I've already poured and have been kind of smelling a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
It's,
yeah. What do you think?
It's like breakfast.
Yeah. There's something about this that I can't get my... get a note on, but it's like very different.
Yeah.
We talked about it Go ahead.
I don't know. You're right. The whole time I've been like, there's something that I am not quite hitting. Like it's
almost like a wine.
Yeah, I can see that.
A red wine. Yeah. Yeah. I mean the color, you know, it's a 90 proof, so it's not too strong. But the colors, you know, your amber that you'll usually get in a bourbon. But it is, I've actually had the 125 proof entry proof one. And I remember that I like this one a little more, but I'm going in for a sip. Have you sipped yet?
No, I'm still smelling. I'm still trying to figure out what that note is that we're both struggling with, kind of.
Mm-hmm. Oh my goodness. It's so pleasant. So pleasant. This reminds me, you might have had this actually, Adam, but Michter's had a toasted barrel release in 2014, I believe. And I always said, especially when I poured that at the bar I worked at, it's basically everything you're looking for in a bourbon without being overpowered. It's got the caramel, it's got the vanilla, it's just got this really chewy caramelness to it. You're not gonna, like, you almost don't cough sipping this. It's very pleasant. I'm loving it. But did you get your note on the nose yet? I think what I'm getting the most is wine. Definitely a little vanilla.
I think that on the nose, there's a hint of orange or orange peel.
I am getting that as well, for sure.
So this was the first whiskey that I ever got the note of pancakes, right?
Yep, like that's the one.
Maple syrup and pancakes.
So you really impressed me that day, especially with your tasting notes.
Right. And so having just tasted this now, I don't taste it at all.
Yeah, I'm not getting as much.
I am curious if my juice here has been, the taste has changed drastically because of the crack in the top of the bottle I had.
Is it pleasant though?
No, yeah, it's not as pleasant as I remember, but it's good. It's a little metallic-y for me.
Might very well be some oxidation.
I normally like that metallic tinny taste, a hint of it, but this is actually, it's pretty strongly metallic.
Really?
Yeah.
So the other thing is that this bottle kind of has been in its last inch or two for at least a year.
Right.
So that might have been some oxidation in the bottle as well. But then again, you had some probably like close to a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But, can you believe that? It's been over a year since we met.
Yes, it has. And I was actually, I forget what I was looking at. I was looking at when we first discussed, no, I know what it was. I was scrolling through my own personal Instagram and I believe that I have a post where I'm writing in a journal and I spilled some whiskey on it, and it was
the Sazerac.
Yeah. Yeah. And, that was like from April. And so like April last year is like when we first started talking about whiskey, and then very quickly after that, just like, we're like, let's do a podcast on it. So
yeah. I think our first Instagram post was like, somewhere in April. So we've been eyeing this idea for at least a year now.
Yeah, for sure. So, cheers to that.
Cheers.
Any other tasting notes you got?
I honestly, like, I can't narrow it down on this one, but it is so good to me.
It's like pretty orangey. It's pretty orangey for me.
Yeah, I'm definitely getting a lot of that. Maybe not so much orange peel, but like a really subtle like orange.
Right.
I'm going to drop a few drops.
I just did.
Oh, nice. You got your drops? Yep. No, it's ice you don't have.
No, I don't have ice.
Yeah. So the nose muted out a little bit for me. It's definitely not as strong a nose with a little bit of water in there.
For sure.
But it kind of muted it pretty strongly, but I'm going to go in for the sip unless you are already.
No, you're fine. I'm just smelling.
Orange shows up a lot more on the palate. It's strong and it's almost coffee now. Like I, like by like coffee, I mean like coughing. It is a little more, bitter. I much prefer it neat.
I can tell you that the water has introduced the, pancake smell to me.
Oh, cool. Yeah. And you, like you, if I was right, you, or if I'm right, you mentioned how it like even brought out the, like maple syrup of a, like a pancake breakfast.
Right. The taste is completely different and not as good.
Yeah, I agree. It's much more metallic.
Right.
Much more of that bitterness. I'm a little worried about the ice I'm about to put in.
Yeah, you dropped that ice.
I literally just poured the last bit of my bottle, so I won't have any more of this probably ever again.
Bottle kill.
I should do a picture. You know how they like pour it upside down and leave it like that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, this is, I just put a little ice in. The nose is better than the, with a few drops of water, but it's still super muted compared to the neat pour. Yeah, it's got that orange, almost orange peel nose now. It's amazing how different it is, from the original neat pour, but I'm going to go in for a sip.
Well, ice and water will do that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm drinking this with a, an Oberon ale from Bell's Brewery.
Oh, nice. Love Oberon.
And it is the perfect pairing. I got to tell you.
Oh, nice. I like the idea of beer bourbon pairing.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, there's the classic shot of a Boilermaker. That's a beer and bourbon pairing.
Yeah, exactly. That's the ultimate pairing right there. Throwing it right in.
Right.
Better with ice than with water.
Hmm.
Much better than both is the neat pour. But yeah, I'm getting a little sweetness on the ice. It's more orangey than caramely. But definitely pleasant, much more pleasant than with ice or with water rather. But yeah, highly recommend drinking this one neat. If any listeners out there have the opportunity to get this bottle.
So the all important question, what are you giving this as a rating?
Neat. I give it high to mid eight, mid to high eight, 8.7.
There you go.
What about you?
I am going to not give it a rating.
Okay.
Because I think that the cracked top and it being so oxidized has changed it so much that I don't feel like I can give it a fair rating.
Yeah. No, I respect that.
So for the very first time on this show, I'm not rating the whiskey.
You're pleading the fifth.
That's right.
Yeah, I showed you yesterday that I got a certain special bottle in particular.
Yeah, I mean, you posted about it on Instagram, so we don't have to keep quiet.
Yeah, I'm excited to put that on the future episodes. Is the Van Winkle Special Reserve 12-year Lot B. It is my favorite weeded bourbon of all time, and I've had, for the record, I've had Pappy 23, 20, and 15, and it beats it in my opinion every year.
Well, I'm looking forward to that. Do you know what we're going to be drinking next week?
Yeah. So what are some of the sample bottles you have?
Dude, I have no idea. Remember? I have no idea. They are kept in a separate room.
Okay. Why don't we, for the sake of, you said you had a bullet rye, is that right?
Yeah.
Or do you have a bullet bourbon?
No, I just have a bullet rye.
Okay.
But so I can we'll get a bullet rye. Bourbon.
I'll get me a little sample bottle.
Okay.
And we'll rock that because it'd be, I feel like it's been a little bit since we've had a rye. Maybe I'm wrong.
No, I think you're right.
Cool.
And so, yeah, did you see that this week, I think it was announced that Bullet is doing a special rye?
No.
I think they announced a 12 year, I think.
No way.
I'm not positive, but I'm almost positive.
And I believe Bullet's a MGP product.
Yeah, I think so.
And MGP puts out a good 12-year-ish rye. Depends on how they, you know, age it. But yeah, I would try that for sure.
Yeah. All right. So, listeners, that was the Buffalo Trace Experimental Collection from 2015. It's the Old Fashioned Sour Mash Entry Proof 105. It's 90 proof. I don't know what all that meant. I'm sure Cole explained it at the beginning, but I checked out. I hope you enjoyed that. Now it's time for Whiskey World News. Yes, Whiskey World News, the part of the show where we take an article from the internet that's about whiskey and we read it, we tell you what website it's from and who wrote it and all that good stuff. We don't want to take any credit. We want to make sure that everybody who's involved gets the credit. Cole, I am still getting some echo in my headphones, so I might stutter while I'm reading this because it's kind of like one of those speech jammers.
No, for sure.
If that is making sense. So hopefully I can get through this. I might, while I'm reading, Cole, take my headphones off so I'm not too distracted. So don't try and talk to me while I'm reading this, okay?
I'll just make subtle comments like, interesting.
Oh, yeah. Perfect. I'm actually excited about this article because it's something we have talked about a few times on the show. We have brought up, what water does to whiskey, adding water, and what ice does to whiskey, because I have asked the question, is the ice changing flavor just because of the dilution of water from the ice, or does chilling whiskey actually change the flavor? So this article is actually going to touch on that. It's from thewhiskeywash.com, and the title of the article is A Few Words About Water and Ice in Whiskey. It's written by Tim, I think you would probably say his name, Knittel. It's Knittel. For no reason whatsoever, the echo just went away. So I don't know what is going on, but here we go. Again, whiskeywash.com, A Few Words About Water and Ice in Whiskey by Tim Knittel. There are many things whiskey lovers love to debate, but the particular question of adding water or ice to whiskey has been known to ignite raging Twitter infernos. So, herewith, a look at the history and science of the effect of temperature and dilution on our favorite libation. The history of whiskey is replete with wonderful myths and legends. The origin of the phrase, on the rocks, meaning with ice, is likely one of those. Popular tales have it that ye old Scotsmen would place cold river stones into their rough askbach. I don't know how to say, uskba, I don't know, to tame some of its fire. But the OED, I don't know what the OED is, do you?
I don't.
Okay, but the OED doesn't give us an oldest known usage, and several etymology websites date the phrase to 1946 without citing a source. Regardless, every whiskey drinker has a specific expectation if they order a dram using that phrase. The idea supporting including ice is that it will make the whiskey more enjoyable to drink, while the contention is that the dilution dilutes the flavor. So which is right? Well, purely anecdotically, mind you, I've heard that in certain parts of the U.S. South, illicit liquor may be found in little mason jars in some folks' freezers. It is apparently much easier to imbibe at sub-zero temperatures than if the little jar had been left out on the counter. There's actual science to back that up. The, quote, heat of beverage alcohol comes from the ethanol molecules triggering the nerve endings that respond to heat, and those in turn send pain signals to the brain. The higher the concentration of alcohol, the more the burn. Secondary compounds common in whiskey from the grains and the barrel act to exacerbate the effect. But the human brain doesn't like contradictory information. So, a cold beverage which triggers the nerves in the opposite direction will actually cancel out the perception of heat in the brain, so that frozen shine doesn't seem quite so hot. Ergo, ice equals more enjoyable whiskey. But what about that But what about that dilution? I hear some people cry. Dilution does, in fact, dilute the flavor of whiskey in certain circumstances, but not in all. A common tradition in Scotch is to open a whiskey by adding a few drops of water, possibly inspired by the debate, or possibly to expense some whiskey. I don't know what that meant. In 2017, oh, I see what he's saying. Possibly inspired by the debate, or possibly to have the magazine pay for whiskey. In 2017, Bjorn C.G. Carlson and Rand Friedman published a molecular analysis of dilution in whiskey. And then they do a short part of the paper, and I'll read that here. Thus, the taste of guaiacol and similar compounds will be more pronounced when whiskey is further diluted in the glass. This taste enhancement is counteracted by the dilution of guaiacol's concentration. Overall, there is a fine balance between diluting the whiskey to taste and diluting the whiskey to waste. This balance will, and I love that phrase, there's a fine balance between diluting the whiskey to taste and diluting the whiskey to waste. I love the way they put that. This balance will depend on the concentration and types of taste compounds that are characteristic for each whiskey. Similar considerations can be used to optimize the alcohol concentration of other spirits, including gin, rum, and brandy. So back to the article. So a bourbon and branch, I don't know what branch isn't a bad thing to a point. Do you know what that means? So a bourbon and branch?
I have no idea what that means.
Yeah, maybe it's a type of water that they might put in there.
Oh, yeah.
In order for the opening effect to work and not to take the whiskey to waste, there must be a specific type of taste compound present at sufficient concentrations. It would seem then that in general, sorry, I got to take a drink because my mouth is dry. Higher proof whiskeys with high flavor potential are the best candidates for enhancement with water. Any whiskey, but especially the high proof variety, may benefit from the heat reduction induced by coolness. Individual mileage may vary. When manipulating dilution and temperature in whiskeys, the On the Rocks often offers the best of both worlds, with both a reduction in heat and an increase in flavor as long as it doesn't wash out. One option occasionally presented by bartenders is the chilled and strained mechanism of stirring or shaking spirit over ice, then straining it and presenting it neat, preferably in a chilled glass. Another method that is used is to use a large ice cube or a sphere of ice, with the latter having a smaller surface to volume ratio that will cause less dilution. The bigger the ice chunk, the better, because the greater the thermal mass, the slower the melting. If you're playing along at home, remember that the quality of the water matters when making ice or adding it directly to whiskey. Tap water usually contains off-flavored compounds, so try using pure spring or distilled water instead. So I read that whole article, and it's a little longer than we normally take on Whiskey World News, just because that's interesting, because we've talked about it. If chilling the whiskey, you know, not necessarily adding ice, but the coldness of it, if that changes the flavor, and it sounds like it doesn't, that chilling it doesn't necessarily change the flavor, but it makes the flavor more accessible.
Yeah.
I don't know if you took that out of the article as well.
Yeah, like it's, you get more... You get less burn, therefore more, or maybe you mentioned like less burn, but you get more without the burn, I guess, is kind of what I got.
Right. So they're saying that when you drink a whiskey neat, just, room temperature whiskey neat, there are things in it that cause your pain receptors to go off and trigger pain in your brain because of the heat, because of the perceived heat that your tongue is feeling. And they're saying that the brain can't handle two opposite or conflicting signals from the same nerves, basically. So that they're saying you put if the whiskey is chilled, the heat receptors are going to go off and say, hey, this is heat. But then the liquid is cold, and so your brain kind of cancels it out and says, okay, there's no pain. So it's almost like you're able to taste the flavor more because you're able to concentrate more on the flavor as opposed to the burn.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like.
I am not, you know, I like the burn. I like a little bit of that burn. So I don't know. I think I would almost always prefer to try whiskey room temperature beforehand. But there have been some that we've noticed on this show that I've been like, oh, you know what? I actually like it cooler. And it's not necessarily about dilution. It's about that it's cold. So I don't know.
Well, I mean, I think it's funny. Like, every time I hear this debate, it is very much dependent on it's always better with this, or the other side is saying it's always better like meat, or, you know, whatever it is. And I find it funny that, like, even on this show, we've kind of realized, for example, today, that I prefer this specific pour meat. But then there's like some of the other ones, like even the Rendezvous Rye or Yamazaki 12, which is like, I prefer that with ice. And I think it's really so dependent on, one, who you are, how you taste, and then which bottle you're drinking.
Right.
So I find it funny that this article basically went in one of those directions and ran with it, even though, I mean, they kind of gave it like, you can try different things, but kind of sounded like some of the parts that was saying is like, this is the best way with this one. And I think it really just depends on the bottle for the most part.
For sure. And like you said, that has been what we found. It's just completely, yeah. It's dependent on the person and the bottle. So, I don't remember who I was talking to recently, about whiskey, and, but they were saying they will always, they just said the best way to drink whiskey is to drink it neat. And there's like, it can't be improved. And I can't agree with you. Cause, you know, over the last year, I've tested, you know, what is this, episode 43 or 44? I've tested
40 some.
Yeah, I've tested 40 something whiskeys and drank all of them neat, and at least with a drop of water, and some of them with ice, the majority of them with ice. And I can tell you that some have been better once they've been added, or once water has been added, or once ice has been added. So it's, I you know, like I've said from the beginning with this show, it's all subjective. It's all about the person and the individual and what they like. And then you have to take into account, and I've said this from the beginning, what has that person been eating? Did they have something that really opened or damaged their taste buds and stuff?
Did they have a pairing beer?
Right. Exactly. So I don't know. I love that you got me into whiskey, but what I love about being into whiskey is the science that is behind it. And I don't like science very much. I wasn't good at it, but it's the explanation behind it and stuff. It's very fascinating. And it seems like it's just this never ending thing of like, oh, we can always learn more about this delicious liquid that we like to poison ourselves with.
Yeah, for sure.
So, again, Cole, what are we drinking next week?
We're drinking a Bullet Rye Standard. And luckily there's no other Bullet Rye I can think of.
Right. Except I think that they just announced that 12-year rye, I think. I'm pretty sure.
It's the rye, it's not the bourbon.
What?
I thought you mentioned it was like a 12-year bourbon.
Oh no, it's a rye. It's a rye for sure.
Cool. So we're drinking the non-12-year Bullet Rye.
Right. All right. So sorry that something happened to our recording.
Seriously.
Listeners, it happens, Cole. Don't beat yourself up. It happens. But yeah, so hope you enjoyed this episode. Tune in next week when we're drinking that Bullet Rye. And as always, I hope that our love of spirits lifted yours.